And welcome to episode 11 of season 9 of Movie Raw Minute, the daily podcast where we yippee-ki-yay our way through the Die Hard duo, Die Hard 4 and 5, 5 minutes at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again today is Travis Bowe of the Minute of Thieves and Real Comic Heroes. Welcome back to the show, Travis.
Thank you for having me.
Yes. Rebecca, I hope you had a nice weekend.
An excellent weekend. We've done a lot of gardening this weekend, so I'm tired and dirty, but.
But you can still talk about a Die Hard movie.
That's right.
that's the important thing. So episode 11 begins with Gabriel continuing to wait patiently, and ends with John telling Bowman the truth. So we ended things yesterday with the villains of the movie finally figuring out a way to download their information that they wanted, and Gabriel was quite giddy at the end of the episode on Friday, where he finally saw that the data was starting to be transferred. Mm-hmm. And this minute begins with Mai looking up at the screen and Gabriel, and they're ecstatic, and he goes, "There you go."
And it's funny that you like, I don't read any pleasure or joy on, especially on Gabriel's face. I mean, he plays it so cold and robotic, I feel like,
I don't know. I see the joy in his eyes there.
Okay.
Maybe not. Well, we both know that he's about to make millions, so he's happy.
Yeah. Yeah. I just don't see any emotion from this guy. Okay. And Timothy Olyphant is great. I mean, we've seen him in, be amazing in a ton of stuff. I think at this point in his career, like, he's just starting to
be noticed.
To be noticed. Yeah. He's been a little bit underrated up till now. It was like, I love him in The Girl Next Door, mm-hmm. and he's playing just this sleazy guy, porn producer, who's an absolute dirtbag. But he's so enjoyable and fun to watch because he's smirking the whole time, and having fun as that character, I think. And then, a bunch of other stuff he's great in, but yeah.
Right. Okay, that's true. And so then he then turns to Casper and goes, "Let me know when the download reaches 20%. He goes, "Okay." So again, it's pretty funny because, like, being someone who uses computers often, I don't get happy when something reaches 20%.
Yeah, you're right.
I'm waiting for it to get to 90%, and then I'm like, okay,
yeah,
that's when I can start being happy. Up until then, you never know what's going to happen. And they give us a little shot of the screen, and we see, social security numbers with different financial amounts and dates. My assumption is that's like the birth date of the person, of how much money they have. And once again, it goes back to what we talked about on Friday, that the numbers are not the same. Meaning, yeah, they spent a little bit of time. It might be repeating numbers and stuff like that, but we're not at a point where we see those.
Mm-hmm.
And then we can see on the left-hand side of the screen a list of, folders. And it some of them are pretty funny. It says, "No East, East, Washington, Lincoln, Hamilton, Grant, Franklin, Ustinov."
Mm.
Right, which my assumption is probably Peter Ustinov, the actor.
Right, he just came up. I just talked about the animated Robin Hood, and he'd voiced the Prince John. Yeah.
Victoria, Alabama, Alaska, Arizona, Arkansas, California, Colorado. So it basically, what it tells me just by looking at this is that, they were just randomly throwing things in there. So, hey, let's put a bunch of presidents in there, and then someone said, "Hey, let's talk about Robert Prince John and throw in Ustinov."
And that's weird. Yeah.
And then they just start listing states.
Yeah.
Again, it's always fun looking at these type of things in movies because they don't expect anyone to really be looking at them. So they sometimes spend more time than they should, and sometimes they don't. And it's always fun trying to figure out which case is that. You know, is this one of those cases where we're going to find some really fun stuff, or is it just going to be bland? And I got to tell you, this one's fun. Especially just throwing Ustinov in the middle because there's no way that it could relate to anything else. You know, I don't know of any other Ustinovs. I don't think I've ever heard that in any context besides Peter Ustinov.
Unless it's the name of a place, which would be the context here of this list, you know, Victoria is the next one, and that's, you know, Victoria, British Columbia, you know,
Yeah,
there's
but why
several
would they have
places,
Social Security? Why would they have information from the Social Security?
I don't know.
Again, I don't see, like, doing a quick search, I don't see anything else that there is a place in Russia called Ustinov. Ustinov,
That's
USSR.
kind of what I, you
You know.
know, expected it to be, but yeah, again, I don't know why it would be on this list. That is a weird thing to be in this list. You're right. It's so,
The
you
truth
know.
is the only okay. So when I clicked on Ustinov USSR, it gives me the Wikipedia page of Dmitry Ustinov, who was the former Ministry of Defense of the Soviet Union, from 76 to 84. So I don't really know. And he died in 1984. That's why he stopped being the Ministry of Defense. So again, maybe the guy who does the set decoration is a fan of Russian history. I don't know. That would be my closest guess of what it could be.
It's a mystery for sure.
Yes, that's true. And then we're back with John and Farrell, who have finally left the police precinct, you know, to once again watch all of the chaos going on outside. We see part of the sign outside the precinct, which we can see says Metropolitan Police Department, District of Columbia. But we,
Does it
I
say district of?
yes,
Okay,
it says
I didn't
District
catch that.
of CA or
Oh,
CO.
okay.
So
Okay.
my assumption is it is supposed to be District of Columbia. But
Okay, yeah, it's
I
real brief.
don't,
Okay.
yeah, it's very brief. But what I was hoping was that it would tell me the number of the precinct, because then I could actually check if there really is a precinct there. But you know, they don't let us do that. And then John goes, please, we hear someone, a random cop say, please remain calm. And then as John is walking through the crowd, he goes, excuse me. And you see him like grunting a little bit in pain. And he goes, excuse me. Thank you.
It was weird, like watching this. Every time I see this sequence, it looks like he's preparing to address the crowd. The way he says, excuse me, it doesn't sound like just I need to get through here. It sounds like he's trying to get everyone's attention. And the first time I was watching it, I'm like, is he about to tell everyone, like, remain calm? Like, is he trying
Go back to
to
your
whip the
car.
crowd? I couldn't figure out, like, why is he trying to get everyone? And then, like, he just kind of waits there until Matthew, like, gets, you know, kind of gets up next to him. You know, it was just odd. It just felt like it was leading up to something that didn't come to be. But yeah, I don't know why it just feels like he's about to address this crowd, but clearly he's not.
That's right. And then Farrell goes, holy shit. And just like looking around, he's just like amazed at the amount of people that are gathering here, you know, at this
Yeah,
point.
another moment like he had inside the police station where he's just overwhelmed by what he's seeing, you know.
I think you can look at it twofold. You can look at it on the one hand, what you mentioned yesterday about the fact that, okay, he can't believe that this idea of a fire sale would cause, you know, this much panic, and that could be overwhelming him. But on the other hand, you know, he seems like a loner. You know, he seems like someone who is he's in his environment when he's in his apartment in front of a computer, not in crowds. You know, he could be somewhat agoraphobic or something like that. You know,
I think they give him strong Neo vibes from The Matrix. Like when you first meet Neo, he's in his
Correct.
apartment, he's downloading something he shouldn't be, you know. I think they wanted you to give the same kind of vibe. Yeah.
And it's possible. Never know. Maybe he's Neo. And then John just comes, like you see a little light bulb, above his head, and he goes, "Kid, hey, kid." He goes, "Yeah. Got a phone in that bag?" And he goes, "Yeah." And John goes, "Okay, come on, let's go." And trying to figure out where they're gonna go from here. And then the shot changes, and we're back, and we see a picture of Mai on a on like a FBI card that's like slotted into a like a card carrier. I don't even know what you would call it, a card dispenser,
Yeah,
but
just an ID
an
badge holder.
ID badge, right? And did you see the name that's written on there?
It's like Tara, and then the guy says it, or right after
Okay.
that. It's like Tara
Where
something, I think.
I will tell you. It says Tara Tovarek.
Tovarik. Yeah, I couldn't catch the
Right.
last name.
All right. And then Trey, closes the suitcase and gives it to her, and then looks at her badge and says, "And here you go, Agent Tovarek." Guess that's you. Now.
They had like a quick second where they show the name, the manufacturer of that case,
Okay.
and they just linger on it for a second. I thought, like, why are they? It seems like weird product placement because it's not like a brand that everyone knows, but when you look up that brand, it's like that's the manufacturer of those cases. Like everyone's seen these cases in countless movies,
The Rimowa. Rimowa, I guess you could say maybe.
I forget what it was, but
No, I don't.
yeah,
I'm just trying to figure out how to pronounce it.
Ramawa. Yeah,
Rimowa. Thank
Ramawa or
you.
Ramoa, something.
Right.
Yeah, just that very like standard case for that you see in it. They'll either hold a bomb inside or cash or whatever henchman case you need, or villain case, or whatever, MacGuffin case.
Yes, that I think that's what we got here.
Yeah.
This is definitely a MacGuffin case. But again, we all know what the main MacGuffin case is in movies.
Yes.
There's no question about that when you got Jules and
Oh
Vincent,
yeah.
carrying around that. There's
Yeah.
no better MacGuffin case than that.
Are
And
Samuel Jackson and Bruce Willis the only crossovers from like Quentin Tarantino to Die Hard movies?
I believe
There
so,
might be a,
but there
yeah.
might be a few others. There might be a few other minor characters here and there, but
Yeah,
no
yeah.
one major.
Okay. I couldn't remember if there was like any
Alan Rickman,
standouts that I'm.
that's right. Alan Rickman never worked with Tarantino. So,
Yeah.
yeah, we'll have to wait.
Yeah.
Maybe you can think of some tomorrow during tomorrow's game, but we'll see. We'll
Oh.
see when we get there. And so I just had to look up what Tavarik is. Okay. So the only thing that I can find of the name Tavarik is it's a ship from Star Trek. It was a
Is
Romulan
it?
ship called
Oh, okay.
the Tavarik. It is a Vorelius class dreadnought that saw service with the Romulan Star Navy during the 24th century. In
Okay.
2375, the Tavarik was made the flagship of the third Tullian fleet. I don't have any other information about it, but I just thought it was very funny that it's the
Does
exact same word.
yeah. Huh. Does it say Tavar, so 2375, so that's in Kirk's timeline, like the original? Does it say where that ship is featured? Like which series or which?
This is Deep Space Nine.
Okay.
In that year, that's what I'm saying. I can't
Sure.
really.
Yeah.
The Dominion War ends that year.
Okay.
So,
That's
you
weird that there's another Deep Space Nine.
know, reference coming up.
Wait a minute, wait a
Yes.
minute.
No,
No, no, no.
well, yes
Two
and no. Yes and no.
Voyager.
We'll get there. We will
Okay.
get there. There's
All right, all right.
but yeah, so this is what's taking place. So it's after Kirk.
Okay. Yeah. I couldn't remember what time frame that would be. Yeah.
Well, come on. I mean, I can't believe you don't know what happened
I
in
know. Yeah.
2375. You know, all right, Travis, I think we're gonna have to stop having you on these
Right.
episodes if you don't know what happened in
Yeah.
2375. Being that I've never seen all of Deep Space Nine, so it, Deep
Good.
Space Nine is I when it was when they were on in syndication, I watched all of Next Generation, and then I watched the first season of Deep Space Nine, and then I've been meaning for the last 30 something years to go back and rewatch all
You
of them.
just haven't found the time, right?
I really haven't.
Who has the time?
For 7 seasons? Come on. So my goal is eventually to find the time to rewatch all 7 seasons of Deep Space Nine, all 7 seasons of Voyager, and then
Yeah.
the I think the was it the 5 seasons of Enterprise? Because Enterprise, I think I only saw the first 2 seasons of,
Okay.
but I have seen all of the Picard ones. The recent
Yeah,
ones
yeah.
I love. I love the Picard stuff.
Right on. Yeah. My wife and I, we went through all of Star Trek a couple of years ago. Yeah, so it's we didn't do Enterprise. That's the one we didn't do. But
You see,
we've seen all the old.
I'm a big Scott Bakula fan. So
Okay.
that like I loved when Enterprise came out, like, oh wow, you know, Scott Bakula is the captain, you know, that type of thing.
Yeah.
But that's just because I'm a Quantum Leap fan, you know. So yeah, so he makes fun of the fact that her name is Tavarik. Maybe you know what? Maybe he makes that comment because he knows that Tavarik is the name of a Romulan ship. Because he is a Trekkie, which would make sense
Probably.
that Trey is a Trekkie. Maybe he
Yeah.
thought of that idea. He's like, hey, let's think of something obscure. Hey, I remember
Yeah.
the name of this Romulan ship during Deep Space Nine called Tavarik. That's what I'm going to give her.
It's just interesting, like I don't know if it's like, does that name fit this person? Like, I don't know that it does, but
Maybe the
I don't
Tara
know.
does.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe that's part of it. I don't know.
Yeah.
Right, and then we see she leaves, and she's got like an FBI vest on. And she's got a gun, you know. And Gabriel looks at her, and then gives her a kiss.
Again, the
And
most emotionless kiss I've ever seen on screen.
well, again, it's to help us understand that the two of them are a couple, you know. And
Yeah,
you know.
there's just, I don't care about these two as a, you know.
No, of course not. And I. If I remember correctly, and again, I will find out in the next few weeks, but this might be the last time they see each other.
Oh,
You
absolutely. Yeah.
know, I don't remember if they get back together, you know,
I don't th
before
think
later.
so. They probably talk to each other, you know, radio or
Right.
phone, or maybe they made, I don't remember if there's any like FaceTime in this movie, like, or, you know, proto FaceTime, that kind of thing, but can't remember, but I'm sure they talk after this, but
And then he has a longing look at her as she goes to the helicopter that she's about to enter, you know, which again is foreshadowing that he's never going to see her ever again.
yeah.
But
Did you
as
look
you
up?
said, he's very emotionless here. Did I look up this helicopter? Is that what you're going to ask?
Yes.
Yes, I did.
Yeah. Okay.
I know what movies this helicopter was in. Do you?
I do.
Okay. So why don't you go ahead? Tell everyone what movies has this helicopter been in?
Well, this one, I mean, it was easy to find out because I just looked up the, you know, not a tail number, but the
The registration number, yeah.
the N450CC, and then it pulls up, you know, this specific helicopter, which is a 1983 Aero Spatiale AS350 Euro something helicopter. And yeah, it's appeared in, you might recognize this helicopter from such films as Live Free or Die Hard, Blonde and Blonder, Black Dawn, Resident Evil Extinction, Need for Speed, Why Him, Batman Begins, And then probably most recently as in the hit TV series Yellowstone, you know.
Very good. Very cool.
And I feel like there might have been more, but those were the ones that I
Right, those are the ones that I got via the IMPDB, which is
think
something
that,
that I only just realized that I only found out doing research this season that there is such a thing. You know, I never thought about it before. The Internet Movie Plane Database. Yeah, very cool. It's cool that you can look these type of things up.
They've got one of those for cars and guns and
Cars I
probably
knew about,
other.
but I knew about guns. And then Gabriel's look at his love, who's about to disappear, disappear from his life, is interrupted by Casper, who's on the phone and then walks up to him and hangs up the phone and goes, "Downloads at 20%." And then Gabriel goes, "All right, time to move."
Do you think he waited till the downloads were at 15%, started walking, you know, so that when it got to him, it was like, okay, now they're 20, or you know what I mean? It's like you're like what percentage were they at when you started walking, or like when you were, you know, on the phone? You know, I don't know. It's a
Well,
funny little.
it could be one of two things that my guess would be. Okay, one could be that he was on the phone with one of the other guys and said, "Okay, it's at 18, it's at 19. All right, I'm walking towards Gabriel," and then goes, "Okay, it's 20." That's the first thing. The second thing is it could be that, it hit 20 and then he walked outside to go tell he was going to go tell Gabriel, and then he got a phone call from his mother. And he started talking to his mother, and then he hung up with her because he's standing next to Gabriel. And he goes, "Oh, by the way, Gabriel, we just hit 20%, but they're really at like 26% now." Those are the two options that I can think of. And then Gabriel says something really weird. He goes, "Let's keep them chasing their tails." Okay,
Yeah, pretty standard, you
they're
know, die
exactly.
hard villain sort of schemes are to have the police, FBI, whatever, like chasing false leads. I mean, that's just standard.
That's right. That's right. And then it's just really cool because they make this truck look like a transformer with the way that it's gets folded up and Autobots
Oh
lift it
I see what you're saying. Yeah,
up. Just the way it
the
all like clicks together and stuff like
yeah.
that. And then we get a shot of Gabriel sitting in at his desk, apparently inside this truck that's driving, and we hear a reporter, "Due to recent activity, law enforcement agencies are being extremely cautious. They're telling drivers to abandon their vehicles until they are searched. And as you can see, canine units are checking each vehicle." Now, whether this is connected to the anthrax reports we heard earlier or some other new terrorist threat, and they do a nice transition here.
I like the transition.
To bring us back into the FBI area.
I couldn't like it's, at first seeing this news report of them checking vehicles and everything. I was like, was there a lead up to this? Something with like we got to check every car. We're looking for something in cars. Like, you know, I get that it's just like this is just fallout. This is just like trickle down terrorism, you know, like what they did at the place with the anthrax is like led to, you know, this, and now that's got everyone so worried about everything coming into the city, I guess, you know, that so it's like it's don't know. When I thought about it for too long, it was like was there a threat with vehicles, you know, but I'm sure it's just meant to show us that there's so much chaos going on. Everyone's, you know, spread thin, looking for danger.
Exactly. Okay, so they mentioned canine units. All right. Do you know how far back the idea of using dogs to help law enforcement goes?
I don't, but that's a great rabbit hole to go down.
Oh, of
I
course.
mean, you know, man and dog have like been paired up for, I mean, centuries. So it doesn't surprise me that we started to use them as, you know, working dogs with law enforcement. But I can't think of a, you know, anything like in the UK where I've seen dogs working with the cops. It feels like an American thing. I'm sure it's not. You'll tell me it's like been, 1,000 years old.
No, it says that it says here that it goes back to the Middle Ages,
Does
where
it? Oh, I mean,
they would
yeah,
use
I can.
the
Okay.
constables would use bloodhounds when they were hunting down outlaws.
Okay.
The first recorded use of police dogs were in the early 14th century in France, where dogs were used to guard docks and piers. And then in the late 14th century, they were starting to be used in Scotland, and they were known as slough dogs, Slough, which is where the word sleuth came from, detective. And then between the 12th and 20th centuries, the police dogs on the British Isles and the European continent were primarily used for their tracking abilities.
Okay. I mean, yeah, I get that.
In the it started getting a little more popular, and then they actually used them to try to track down Jack the Ripper in the 1880s. It was known that they were using bloodhounds for that.
Okay.
And when they really started to be used as, I guess you can say, police dogs,
Yeah.
that started in Ghent, Belgium, in 1899. And they would use them against like criminal gangs that would roam at night and stuff like that. And
Okay.
then this idea spread to Austria-Hungary and Germany. And then they started people started doing experiments in dog breeding and training. The German police selected the German Shepherd as the local breed for police work, and they opened their first training school in 1920.
Okay.
Obviously, we know that that continued for a while, that the German Shepherds were used not just for police but also army stuff
Oh, yeah.
in Germany over the years. But no, it's really interesting that the idea of using police using dogs in this type of in this type of situation, the fact that it goes back really, really far is pretty cool. I
Yeah.
know it's sort of a cheat, as you said, that it's not specifically being used, the same way as being used today. But if you had constables that were using bloodhounds to track criminals,
No,
those
that I
dogs,
get. I think the you mentioned like the ones being used to
to guard the
more
piers.
like secure guarding. Yeah, that's
Okay, but
more.
that was France. What do you expect in France?
Ah, right, yeah.
So there are four main specializations that they have for police dogs. Okay, they are either apprehension and attack dogs.
Sure.
Okay, those are the ones that are used to
Take
locate,
down.
apprehend, and sometimes subdue suspects. You
Yeah.
have the detection dogs, which are trained to detect explosives or drugs and things like that.
Right.
Some are specifically trained to detect firearms, ammunition, things like that. You have a dual purpose dog, which is known as a patrol dog, and they're used to they're trained and skilled in tracking and criminal apprehension, and are also able to do like different types of searches in buildings and different areas and stuff like that. And the final ones are the SARs, the search and rescue dogs.
Oh, okay.
They're used to locate suspects or find missing people or objects. There are five main dog types that are used. Any guesses what they would be?
For search and rescue or for all
For
those four?
search and rescue.
Okay. Then I gotta go with, I mean, retrievers are great, like golden retrievers, or well, maybe more like the Labrador retrievers,
Remember, you get five
border.
to choose from.
Okay, border collies are really smart and very trainable. I think. Search and rescue. I think the bloodhounds are make sense. Like they're excellent trackers. So,
Okay, yes, bloodhounds are one of them. Yes.
okay. Oh, so the other two, yeah. So I haven't. Dang.
No, you have. I haven't counted any of your guesses yet.
Oh, okay. I
Because
gotcha.
you had the bloodhound was the first one that you were sure that you wanted to put on the list.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I would also say, labs or golden retrievers. I
Both
would
of them
say
are
I
on the
would.
list.
Okay,
Okay. There you
that
go.
doesn't
That's
surprise
three.
me. Then would say, yeah, I like border collies. I think those are really smart, trainable dogs.
Nope, they're not. They're not. They're
Okay.
not on this list. It doesn't mean they're not used. It means that they're not on
Sure.
this
Well,
list. That's all it says.
No, I don't. No, I don't know what the
Okay, there
remaining
was
ones might be.
one that we mentioned earlier.
Oh, the German Shepherds?
German Shepherds,
Okay, that makes sense.
and the final one are Belgian Malinois.
I've probably heard of those, but I can't think of what those are.
Okay, those are the five that they have listed here. And so police dogs are retired if they become injured to an extent where they won't recover completely, whether they when they get pregnant. Or if they're too old or sick to continue to work.
Yeah.
Most dogs that are used in these capacities are used for about 6 to 9 years, depending on there are a lot of factors involved
Oh,
as
yeah.
to when some of them. Then the idea also is that in many countries, when a police dog is killed in the line of duty, they are given the same honors as their human
Yeah.
partners would.
Yeah. They always make a big deal, I mean, it's always big news stories when something like that happens, or when one retires. I feel like your local news, it's always a, they like to, celebrate the dogs when they retire, or yeah.
All right, so now we're back. We're with this great transition, which they're telling a news story, and then now we're in the FBI control center. And Melina then says, FAA just grounded all flights. And then they say, good. And sir, we have complete access over system networks. Oh, sorry. Is it that, they just grounded all the flights. And, we see from this that Bowman is happy, and he goes, good. And then one of the other characters, which you might recognize from another franchise. Do you recognize him?
Sorry, which one are we talking about specifically?
We are talking about the character of Raj, played by Sohn Kang.
Oh, yeah. Han from the
That's right.
Fast
Yes.
franchise, yep. He
So then.
looks so different here. I mean, he looks a little, I think his face is a little puffier here,
And also his hair is different.
Well, yeah. Although he would have been in Tokyo Drift by now, because that would have been like 2003, 4, or something like that. Okay.
No, he's recognizable, but And then he goes, sir, we have complete access over systems networks, the phones, power grids, water, nuclear. So they're giving him a nice update as to what's really going on here. And then two guys show up and climb into their van, and one of them is an actor named Joe Garrity, who has 30 IMDb credits, and the character's name is Jack Perry, because he
Okay.
basically first Bowman says, hey, excuse me, and he goes, Jack Perry, NSA, and then the second guy says, Chuck Summer, DHS liaison, White House made the call. So Jack Perry, the only interesting thing I found out about him besides, the Joe Garrity, is that his nickname is Big Daddy. That's all I could find,
Okay.
the whole thing. The second guy that shows up here is one that we're a little more familiar with. It's
Absolutely.
Tim Russ, who plays Chuck Summer. He's an
Yeah.
actor who was born on the 22nd of June, 1956. Which ironically was yesterday, so
Oh, yeah.
happy belated
Happy
birthday.
birthday, Tuvok.
That's right. And he has 202 IMDb credits, and as you mentioned, he played Tuvok on Star Trek Voyager on 168 episodes.
He also is in one of the three funny moments in Spaceballs. He gets the line, Man, we ain't found
That's right.
when they're combing the
When you're
desert.
combing the desert, that's
Yes,
right.
so he's probably the one of the best parts in Spaceballs. So.
Oh, you're not a fan of Spaceballs?
I've you, over on Real Comic Heroes, you can hear me talking about how much I do not like Spaceballs.
All right. So if I ever choose to do it, which it's on my list, but not that high on the list, I won't give you
I'll
a
talk about. I'll come on. I'm just not gonna be nice about it.
Oh, okay. That's fair. That's fair. So I found some interesting trivia about him. That's obviously all pretty much Star Trek related. That he actually was up for the role of Geordi LaForge on Star Trek:
Okay.
The Next Generation, and
I can
apparently
see that, yeah.
they liked him enough that they remembered him a few
That's
years
cool.
later when they were going for that. He is one of only six actors to appear in 10 different seasons of Star Trek.
Okay. I
Because
think I've seen that trivia fact before, I feel
he
like.
was in Star Trek: Next Generation, Star Trek: Deep Space Nine, and then on Voyager. Voyager, who was on seven seasons. Deep Space Nine, he was on two different seasons, and Next Generation, he was on one season. And he is also one of he is the only actor who's appeared in scenes with eight different Star Trek captains.
Okay. Because he's also in Star Trek 3, maybe, or might be 6. Might be Undiscovered, or,
He's in
yeah,
six. He's in six.
Undiscovered Country. Yeah. I think
Well,
he's
yes and
playing.
no. Once again, we'll go through them.
Oh, okay.
So, all right. So he was with both William Shatner and Alan Ruck in Star Trek Generations.
Yes.
So Star Trek,
That's okay.
it was the Enterprise B
Okay, that's right.
that he was in. Okay. He was in Star Trek: Next Generation in an episode with Patrick Stewart called Starship Nine. He was in Deep Space episodes Invasion Procedures and Through the Looking Glass with Avery Brooks. He was obviously in every episode of Star Trek Voyager with Kate Mulgrew. He was in George Takei was on an episode of Star Trek Voyager, which was called Flashback. So he was
Okay.
he appeared with him. He was in the Star Trek Picard episode Dominion, where he was talking with he was talking with Captain Liam Shaw,
Okay.
and then he's been in scenes with eight captains. The next person, the closest person who's been in with the most captains, was Jonathan Frakes, who was in with four captains.
Okay. Oh, wow. I was
So.
thinking, did Tim Russ not do a voice in Lower Decks?
Not that I'm aware
Guess
of.
not. Okay. Huh. I figured that would be one of the eight.
And another fun fact about him is he's one of only three actors who was a Star Trek regular who appeared in three different Star Trek series, because he was
Sure.
in the Next Generation, Deep Space Nine, and Voyager. So yeah, I thought that was just really cool.
Yeah.
All this information about him. He doesn't have that much to do in this movie, but still,
No. I like though that because they're doing the Johnson and Johnson joke without
That's
doing
right.
it really, and they've already made that joke sort of with the guy who was
Oh,
chauffeuring them.
they made that joke for sure. It
Right,
wasn't that they
right.
sort of made it. I mean, and
Yeah.
the one of the things I brought up at the time was it's very funny that they have this scene where they're meeting these Johnsons, and John makes the comment about it because he
Right.
never met Johnson and Johnson.
Right. Oh, yeah. I guess he, well, did he not talk to
Possibly
him?
no. He possibly wasn't
Oh.
even aware of their existence. He
Yeah,
knew that there were
yeah.
these FBI guys. Maybe,
Okay.
maybe afterwards, he and Al had a little conversation about it,
Yeah. But
yeah.
yeah, so I like that they're sort of, they are those characters, just, but they're not making a direct callback to it by giving them, oh, I'm Agent Johnson, Agent Johnson,
Exactly.
So it's a nice subtle little thing here.
That's right. And so then what Summer says is, Chuck Summer, DHS liaison, what else do you need to call? Anything you need, we're here to help. And then you see the look on Bowman's face, help. And someone else goes, wow, that's great. And then
It's a
they think, well,
weird.
we're going to need some space for our people.
Yeah.
What can they do for us? Well, as you can see, we're using the space. So you guys can stand in the corner and liaise. If I need something, I'll just wave to you.
I like that Bowman, he doesn't have time for this and he doesn't back down to them. He's not going to let them push him around. He tells them to go sit in the corner and they do it without a fuss. It looks like they got the two of them and two other people, I think, with them. And yeah, they're just taking up space. They're just getting in people's way. And this is,
That's what you need to do in a Die Hard movie. Yeah, that sort of comes down
sure.
to.
Yeah. But you expect it to be a power struggle of like, this is our jurisdiction, and all
Well,
that, but
it's somewhat of a callback to the scene in the van in Die Hard with a Vengeance, where again
yeah.
they're talking, but those guys never show up ever again. It's like, let's give you information, and that's it.
Right.
And then the scene changes, and we're watching a truck driving around Washington, drives past the Capitol. You see that it says Norger on the side of the truck.
Yeah.
Did you look that up for what that is?
No, I didn't.
No, neither did I. It didn't. It wasn't something that I found very interesting. But then,
Yeah.
what's great is we get a shot of a phone right after that. We see it's a Nokia phone, definitely
Yeah.
early generation, especially via the graphics and stuff like that. But when this movie came out, it was probably top of the line.
Sure.
And then we see someone holding the card of Miguel Bowman, Deputy Director of Cyber Division, the Federal Bureau of Investigation. We got phone numbers on there. We got an address. It's very interesting. Do you
Did you
think
look
that?
up to?
Did I look up
I was
what?
going to ask, is that the actual address for the FBI?
What do you think?
It probably is.
Yes,
Okay.
it is. Yes. The one thing I can't verify is the zip code, but the address is
Sure.
on 935 Pennsylvania Avenue,
Okay.
Washington, D.C. I've actually been to the Hoover Building.
Okay.
I went on a tour there once. What was this? This was a long time ago. Probably like, was this 2000? And maybe 2001, 2002, something like that. I can't even remember how far back it was. It was a long time
Yeah.
ago, but it was fun. I mean, they didn't show us very much.
Sure.
Most of the stuff was like behind glass and things like that. But I remember I asked the question and the guy didn't know how to answer me. I said, "What's the difference
Huh.
between?" I said, "What's the difference between agent and special agent?" And he said, "No, it's pretty much the same thing." I was like, "Okay, so like, what's so special about being a
What's
special agent?"
yeah.
So yeah, I think I wasn't too wasn't too helpful in that question. Because in movies you see the difference,
Sure.
or you hear the difference, but you don't necessarily know what it means.
Yeah.
So it's just very cool. And then John, we see that it's John who's trying to make a call, and then Farrell goes, "Wait, no, don't call." He goes, "What? Why? What are you talking about? They probably cracked that hours ago. If you use it, they might be able to trace us here. Just put it in your pocket. You sure?"
Yeah.
"Yes." Now, I just find it really funny that obviously we need Farrell here to give us the conspiracy theory aspect of this whole thing.
Right.
It makes a lot of sense, but and John doesn't know the difference either way.
Yeah.
But I just love the fact that they say that they're going to be able to trace us here. How are they going to be able to trace you? Because they don't, because it's Farrell's phone. Not necessarily, not because it's a random phone. Okay, there you go.
Yeah.
That's my answer.
Asked and answered.
Sometimes when you think these things out, you figure out.
Right.
Now,
But it
did
also
you
feels like, going back to kind of what I was saying the last episode, he's not really being pursued anymore. Like, they're not devoting time to coming after these
Okay,
guys.
but
So
he doesn't know that because he doesn't know
fair.
that Rand
Yeah.
thinks they're dead.
True. That's a good point. Yeah.
That's sort of
Yeah,
thing.
it makes sense that he would still be concerned about, yeah, being abducted. Because yeah, at this point they have not, because they're still coming from the tunnel, the helicopter. Yeah, okay. So at this point they were still like fresh off of being chased. Okay.
Now, did you
Okay.
see that when they're talking, there's a glass window behind them that is like has the name of a cafe on there? Did you
Yes.
happen to notice that? Okay, so it says Bren Art Cafe, Restaurant, Gallery. And I gotta tell you, I spent way too much time trying to find information about it, and I couldn't find
Okay.
anything. Did you find anything on that or not?
Really? Yes. Yes, I found this building. I found a blog that is devoted to, finding shooting locations in LA and talking about their history. Yeah, I can go down a deep dive on this building if you want.
Oh, please, please do.
So the Bren Art, yeah, it's like Bren Art, and then underneath that, it's like restaurant, cafe, and something or other, art
Gallery.
gallery or
Gallery,
whatever.
art gallery, right.
So according to the, I guess you'd call it a blog, IamNoStalker.com. It's this blog that's run by a person named Lindsay, and yeah, she just goes, she found this location for an episode of the show Revenge. I don't never watched the show, but
I've
I
never
don't.
seen that either. I've heard of it, but I've
Okay.
never seen it.
Okay. It was used in an episode called Repercussions, it looks like. But then she talks about it being used in Die Hard and says it's currently called the Blind Donkey, this cafe or whatever. Says the Blind Donkey opened its doors on November 7th, 2012. Prior to that time, the space housed Cafe Atlantic, then Bren Art Cafe, then Bren Art Restaurant and Wine Bar, and then the Dish Bistro and Bar.
Oh, wow.
And then let's see. Talks about like what they offer, blah blah blah. I don't care about that. Talks about it's being on the show Revenge. Don't care about that. And then yes, it says back when the space housed Bren Art Cafe Restaurant Gallery, it made an appearance in the 2007 action film Live Free or Die Hard. It is through the restaurant's side window that John McClane and Matthew Farrell watch fake news footage that we'll see a little bit later. And it says, I actually saw Live Free or Die Hard scene being filmed very briefly in late November 2006. I was driving out of the One Colorado parking garage located just across the street from Bren Art Cafe, and while paying at the ticket booth, looked up and was shocked to see a battered and bloodied Bruce Willis standing in the alley right across from me.
Oh, wow.
Because there were cars behind me and I was heading back to work, I could not stop to watch, unfortunately. But the image of Bruce standing mere feet away always stuck with me and brought a smile to my face every time I ventured past the Bren Art space. So,
Oh, wow. That's really cool.
yeah. And then the same blog has, I think it's in the next chunk of minutes when we're like inside a coffee house. She has that information as well. We can talk about that later.
Okay.
Yeah. So there you go. It's the Bren. Well, it's now the Blind Donkey,
Right,
which is
exactly.
still it's still the Blind Donkey. I looked up the Blind Donkey, and they're still up and running. Oh, and this is, I don't like. Oh yeah, it's 53 East Union Street, Pasadena, California.
Oh, wow. Very cool.
So there you go.
Yeah. All right. Thank you for that. It's really weird because, like, when I looked it up, I found nothing. It
Interesting.
didn't
Yeah,
like.
I just looked up Bren Art Gallery, maybe, and
I tried that. That's what's weird. I don't know.
huh,
Whatever.
yeah.
All right. Well, that's why we're doing this together. There you go. And then Farrell says, or you can smash it. And then John takes it and
Yeah.
smashes the phone. He goes, you didn't have to smash it.
That's one thing about this movie is, it's meant to be set in DC. I think the reason I had so much spatial sort of confusion or just location confusion is that it's a movie,
That's most likely not filmed there.
Die Hard movies are, yeah, the previous three, I should say, are, the first one is he's a fish out of water because he's a New York guy and suddenly he's in LA and it's all shot in LA, it's very clearly LA, the whole movie. And then the second one, not so much. Like it's what that airport is in. It's
Dulles.
in DC,
Dulles
right?
Airport in DC. Yeah.
Okay, but like most of the movie is nighttime, so I think they're doing a lot of like. I think we talked about the location of that airport. It's not DC,
No.
but it's
It's
like that one
mostly
gets a
Denver
pass.
and up
Yeah, that's right.
in the Upper Peninsula of
That's right.
Michigan.
Yeah, it's like that one gets a pass because they're not you know, you're not seeing iconic places, and most of it's at night. So, you know, that mostly sets and whatever. But then the third one, like, we're finally, it's McClane in New York City, and they use New York City.
Yes.
And then towards the end of the movie, yeah, they get out of the city, but whatever. Like, that one feels like New York. And this one, like, it's meant to be DC, but they're clearly using Los Angeles for most of the city stuff. Obviously, yeah, they got, like, when we see the Capitol building, like, you know, some of the establishing shots, they're using DC, but most of the movie, it feels like we're in LA, but we're supposed to be in DC. And it just, it really took me out of it. Like, it just feels like walking down this sidewalk, you know, just feels like you guys are in LA, you know? I don't know. It just kind of took me out of it, but.
Okay. I completely understand that. You know, but it's because you did the research, or because when you look at it, you say, this does not look like it's LA. This does not look like it's Washington.
It doesn't look, well, like when they walked out, I think at the first, the beginning of this chunk of minutes, when they walk out of that police station, I feel like I've seen this exterior used as a police station or whatever TV shows. Like, I can tell that they're using LA as, you know, as I guess DC, but most commonly it feels like they're using this part of LA as New York. That's why I think it felt like when they're walking into that police precinct, like, are we meant to be in New York for a minute? Like, you know, I don't know. It just throughout the movie, it just felt like, you know,
right.
Because like we go to Baltimore, like there's so many like location changes in the early part of this movie. Oh, and then later, like the stuff with the overpasses, like that I've seen, you know, used in Transformers movies, and it's very clearly like,
well,
we're
this
in
is
LA.
A Transformer movie, isn't it? Didn't we talk about that?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. So it's stuff like that where it's like, I don't feel like we're, you know, we're where we're supposed to be, you know, so it's a little disorienting.
Okay, I understand that. And so John just continues walking down the street and just finds a random guy and just says, excuse me, police emergency.
Yeah.
He just takes his phone, you know, and he just keeps walking. And the guy screams, hey, and then John talks on the phone and goes, he'll call you right back.
Did they say that in With a Vengeance? Do they hang up on somebody? Is like, he'll call you back or something like that? Was that the fat lady on the phone or something
phone.
Like that?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. No, I think he just hung up the phone on her. I think that's what it was.
Okay. I feel like there was one of the people maybe that they take a phone from. I feel like another one.
It's possible.
Not that this is like meant to be a callback, but yeah.
Right.
Just.
And then John says, here, right in here, come here. They go into like a little alleyway, which is basically just the other side of this of this art gallery.
Yep.
Slash thing. And then you got a signal? Yeah. And then the phone rings and he goes, yeah. And what's really weird is that he's calling Bowman's phone and who answers? Melina.
I can kind of get that.
You'd think that in this situation, Bowman is keeping his phone as close to him as possible.
Right, yeah.
And that's what I would think. And then John goes, this is John McClane for Agent Bowman. And he goes, sir, John McClane is on the line. McClane, go. He goes, we never made it to DHS. They came after the kid again. All your men are down. What about Farrell? Yeah, I got him with me. And he goes, right now. He goes, sir? And then he goes, hang on. Yeah, I'll hope. And, you know, we see, like, that things are starting to get a little crazy here again, which is pretty good. Because, again, it raises the suspense level with the way that they're doing all this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not necessarily, you know, because, like, John is looking through into this gallery cafe. And he sees like a big picture of the Capitol, and they're all like he's a little confused as to what that is, because it's all happening live.
Mm-hmm.
And then John says, "Another day in paradise." And then Melina.
It's a weird line out of context. Yeah, like what are you talking about?
That's right. And then Melina says, "They just swarmed into everything, the whole telecom system, phones, cells. broadcast satellite, and then we see on the screen, you know, this picture of the Capitol, and we have like music playing, the fanfare,
mm-hmm.
and you know, you see the picture. It says live Washington D.C. And then we start hearing music. Are you familiar with the song that is being played here?
I'm sure I know it. I can't hear it right now as we're going through it, so I don't remember what was playing. But I didn't.
America the Beautiful.
Okay. Yeah.
The lyrics were written by Catherine Lee Bates. She wrote the lyrics, and it was composed by Samuel Ward, and the two of them never met. And it was
Year was that?
First published in 1895, on the 4th of July, in a church periodical called The Congregationalist. It was originally just called America. And the song is 1 minute and 9 seconds long. And the there's numerous different versions of it, but we're not going to go through all of them to go through the entire, you know, the lyrics of the whole thing. We're just going to use the lyrics that they use here. So, you know, the lyrics start off, oh, beautiful. All right, I'm not going to sing it. The lyrics start, oh, beautiful. And then Melina says, they're blanketing every station. Then we hear spacious skies for amber waves of grain, for purple mountain majesties above the fruited plain.
Yeah.
And as this is happening, we see things being typed on the screen. What if this is just the beginning? What if you're hurt alone and you dial 911 and no one answers? And then it continues. America, America, God shed. And then we see guys in a cafe. It could be the same cafe. And someone goes, can you put the news back on? He says, this is the news. It's on every channel. Been this way for a few minutes now. And then the song continues. And, you know, Bowman is, everyone's starting to, I mean, or the characters that we're familiar with in the movie start to realize that something strange is going on here.
Yeah.
And, you know, they're looking around trying to figure it all out. And Trey's having a blast, you know, typing in all these little commands. You know, it looks pretty antiquated from today's technology standpoint, the way that he's typing it in.
It bugs me that he's typing this in live. Because what if, I mean, we've all made a typo, you know? What if he's typing this live, he types in the wrong form of there, or just any typo, and then has to like backspace, you know?
Well, that would be on the set decorator, wouldn't it?
What's that? No, man, why wouldn't you, if you're going to do this sort of terrorism display, like pre-record this part, you know, add this in, you know, it just.
Maybe it's part of the thrill of being able to do it live.
Maybe, I don't know. I guess you're just confident that you can type this out perfectly without any like glitches. I also didn't like that there's one that's.
And then the final thing that says on the screen is, what if help never comes?
Yeah. I didn't like that one starts with like, what if you're hurt, blah, 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 and this happens.
Well, I think, and that's, a, this that's, ha- I think it was, that's a Die Hard reference. You know, he's hurt, he's alone. And you know, and you guys aren't helping him. You know, that type of thing. That's a Al Powell line.
Oh, okay.
You know, like, what if you dial 911 and nobody answers? Okay, so it's, what if you talk to Al Powell and you know, Dwayne T. Robinson doesn't help you out? You know, I mean, that's. And you know, we see all these different places with multiple screens of people just looking at it, you know, waiting to see what's going to happen, and then. The entire Capitol building just implodes.
Well, right before that, they in one of those, you know, little places where they're, we see the crowd watching, they you know, center of the frame, they have this brunette who's in this coffee shop. And this is, according to that blog, IamNoStalker.com, this little coffee shop is not, at first I thought we are inside the Bren Art Cafe. We're not. This is... Blah blah blah. It's a something now, as at least when she wrote this blog post, it's called a Groundwork Coffee Company that inhabits that spot. It doesn't say exactly what that location is or where it is, but it's probably somewhere fairly close. But yeah, it's a different little coffee bar. But when we see this brunette, here in the center of the shot, like as I was first watching this, like when I first saw her, I thought, oh, cool, we're seeing Lucy. Like we're
Lucy
checking back in with
McQuaid,
Lucy
right?
and where she is in the world and what her reaction is to all this. And then it like, after half a second, I was like, wait, that's not Lucy, obviously. This is just a random person, but it's like she's focused in a way that it feels like we're supposed to know who this person is for a second. And I thought, why don't we have Lucy here? Like, why? It would be cool to just check in and see that she is somewhere in the city. Obviously we'll find out where she is, but like she's just gone for a huge chunk of the movie. It's like, why not just have her at this moment, like her seeing this danger, not knowing that her dad is like, involved in any of it, but just, I don't know. I just thought, like, when I first thought this was Lucy, like, yeah, why shouldn't it be, but I don't know.
Okay, makes sense. And then as I said, the Capitol building just implodes,
Yeah.
and everyone watching is just in complete shock, because they're not sure if it's real or not. But the
Yeah.
graphics are amazing.
You think?
For 2007, yes.
I gotta disagree with you. I think they look, how do I put this? I think they look like,
Like
it looks
something
like a
you did
mini, it
in
looks like a
Independence Day.
miniature. It looks like how we would show this happen for a movie. I think for one, like there's no fire, there's no explosion really. There's just everything, explodes outward, all the columns and all the concrete or whatever, just like, blasts out. It just looks to me like I should, it's weird, like how I should put this, like, because I think the characters should believe this is real, but I think it looks so fake that no one would believe this is really happening. And then like, I don't know, but it's just I didn't care for this at all. I think the to me
Okay.
it says that the terrorists, faked this, obviously. They used a miniature because it looks like a miniature. There's no fireball explosion. It's just like it implodes, like you said. Like it's just, I don't know. All of it looks fake, and I feel like they should go out of their way to make the country believe that this just happened, and then
Okay, fair enough.
yeah, I don't know. I just, yeah,
Okay.
didn't like
But
it. I also thought it was funny, like they Bowman rushes out to go see for himself. It's
and
like,
so does John.
yeah, and it's like you guys wouldn't what you guys would have heard and felt the rumble, the sound, the explosion, like,
Maybe
I
not because
get,
the music is so loud.
no, you would feel that, because they're both essentially, I don't know if they're on opposite sides of the Capitol, but they're both like several blocks away, but they're still within the city. They would feel this.
Right.
So it's
I gotta
just
give John
funny.
credit for knowing his reference point to the Capitol. Because if it was like in New York, I can completely understand that. But here it's a city that he doesn't know as well. He knows the airport, but that's it. And at this point, Bowman just starts screaming, "Oh my God, oh my God," and the music starts getting louder. And then you see that he raises up the phone and goes, "McClane." And McClane starts looking around, trying to figure out also. And he runs around this cafe in LA. And the two of them are running they're doing the movie thing where one person's running from left to right and the other person's running to left from right to left. Makes you look like they're about to meet up.
Yeah.
And
This is
John
the
starts running down
meet
the
cute.
street. That's right. John starts running down the street. Look out, look out, look out. Then he picks up the phone and goes, Bowman, Bowman, do you see that? And Bowman picks up his radio and goes, McClane. And then John says to him, Bowman, it's a fake. And then we get a panning shot of the Capitol, the real Capitol, as this set of 5 minutes ends. So it's actually a very cool place to end. You know, maybe it would have been better if it ended a second earlier. You know, where we don't see it. You know, but even though John does say it's a fake.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And that's all I have to say about this. Did you have anything else you wanted to add?
Nope. I think I'm good on this one.
All right. Excellent. So today's segment will be Franchise Fever, where my guests will give their top five movie franchises with at least 4 movies in the series. So once again, why don't you start with your number 5 and work your way up?
At number 5, I have the Godzilla franchise with 38 entries.
Wow.
Yeah. And then I go to Star Trek, which has 14 entries. If you count, apparently this list counts the one that just came on Paramount Plus, the Section 31, I think. I haven't seen that one yet.
I
but
hated that. Oh my god.
Oh, okay. Okay.
I had so much hope for it because I'm a big fan of Star Trek Discovery. I really like that one.
Okay.
Especially the first season. I love Jason Isaacs as the captain.
In my opinion,
he's one of the best Star Trek captains ever.
Nice.
Yeah.
Let's see. Number 3, I go to the Bond franchise at 25 entries. Number 1 and 2, it's like, ask me another day and I could maybe flip flop them. But as of right now, at number 2, I've got the MCU, which this list has 40 entries, but they're including Fantastic Four, the Blade, which I don't Blade, which is basically all but canceled, and then they're also counting the 2 Avengers movies that are coming up, Doomsday and Secret Wars. But
Okay.
So
that's fair.
Obviously
it's more than 4, so you're okay.
It's more than 4, so but yeah. If the MCU franchise is number 2, then that can only mean one thing: Star Wars is number 1.
There you go. Excellent. All right, and today's game: state your motto. So once again, I've chosen a state, and I will give you 3 choices, and you have to guess which is the real motto of this state. So I chose this time for you the state of New Mexico.
Okay.
All right. So
never been.
Okay. Yeah, me neither. It's one of the few states I haven't been in. So the choices are: A, united we stand, divided we fall; B, it goes by growing; or C, ever upward.
Man, none of those scream New Mexico to me. The first one feels very like, it feels more like this movie, it feels like that Gimme Left,
Live Free or Die.
Yeah, it kind of feels like more New England, like the original 13 colonies to me. What was the second one?
It goes by growing. And then the third one is ever upward.
Yeah. Now this will be a total guess, so I'm going to go with, wait a minute. I thought New Mexico was Land of Enchantment. So I guess I'll go B. I don't know.
You would be correct. It goes by growing. No, Land of Enchantment, I believe, is the state. They're state mottos, and there's also state. I'm trying to think of what they're called. There's a whole bunch of different things about that each state has.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
I mean,
I think on the quarters, they put stuff like that. I think New Mexico's quarter says Land of Enchantment.
Okay. Could be. There is something to that.
Land of Enchantment, yeah, New Mexico. That is definitely tied to New Mexico. That
Okay,
is
it might be
their.
tied to that. It is the it's the official nickname of the state. That's it.
Okay.
Okay, it's not the motto, it's the nickname.
Okay.
You know, like
Then,
Illinois is Land of Lincoln.
yeah. Then I think Indiana's nick motto and nickname are the same thing then. I think they're
It could be.
both
That is very possible.
interesting.
No, the
Yeah.
nickname's the Hoosier State. Come on.
Oh, of course. Yes.
Oh, come on. Come on, Travis. There. Gene Hackman would be very, very insulted.
Well, he's not around to
To be insulted. There you go.
too soon, too soon.
That's true. That's true. All right. So, Travis, would you like to once again tell people where they can find Travis Bow?
Sure, you can find me over on Real Comic Heroes talking about comic book movies and a few assorted similar, genres. We talk about we threw some Star Trek in there, some Indiana Jones, some James Bond, various, non-comic book franchises, but similar enough, or stuff that we just want to talk about. Yeah, we go through a big list that started with Superman and the Mole Men from 1951 and have worked, in release order. And as of this recording, we just did Josie and the Pussycats from 2001. Yeah, 2001. And are about to do Jurassic Park 3. So yeah, we just go in order and we talk about cool movies.
All right, sounds like fun.
Yeah.
And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Rob Minute. You can find me on my website, movierobminute.com. You can send me an email at movierobminute@movierob.net. You can find me on Facebook, you can find me on Twitter, and you can find me on Instagram. So until tomorrow, yippee-ki-yay!
Yippee-ki-yay.
Some folks are born made to wave the flag. Oh, they're red, white, and blue, yeah. But it ain't me. It ain't me. I ain't no fortunate one.